Welcome to Tuned In with Mike Johnson, a public service of Mount Wilson FM Broadcasters and Global Jazz Incorporated. Now, here's Mike.
Thanks, Al Verde, and good morning, everybody. Welcome to Tuned In from Mount Wilson FM Broadcasters and Global Jazz Incorporated. According to a recent Surgeon General's advisory, teens who spend more than 3 hours a day on social media face twice the risk of experiencing mental health issues such as depression and anxiety. The advisory comes as youth mental health remains in a state of crisis. According to the CDC, 1 in 5 children have a mental, emotional, or behavioral disorder, and only about 20% of those children receive care from a mental health provider. These findings may be alarming to parents who can feel overwhelmed tackling the issues surrounding social media. Adults cannot afford to wait to understand the full impact of social media. Critical brain development in adolescence is happening right now, and it's crucial for parents to play a role in helping their children navigate social media in a safe and healthy way. And with the back-to-school season in full swing, my guest this morning is Dr. Arkina Dubey, and she is the Chief Medical Officer of United Healthcare of California, and she's going to talk about things to help you and your child be more informed, and she's joining us this morning from the Bay Area. Doctor, good morning.
Glad to be here, Mike. Let's talk about kids.
Yes, Doctor, thank you for your time this morning. So let's just begin. How can parents understand and monitor their teen's social media activities?
The parents, you know, look, social media is here to stay. So mm-hmm. The parents are tasked with several different tips that I'm here to share to help protect and guide the kids to better manage their social media interaction and consumption of social media as a constant that we're seeing in kids, especially if you look at the age group of 13 to 17-year-olds, mm-hmm. which is the high schoolers. Nearly 95% of these kids are using social media, and almost constantly. And 40% of underage kids, they're not even allowed to participate, which is 8 to 12 years of kids, are using it. So this is here to stay. The very formative brains of our kids need protection. And so here are a few tips that I'm really thrilled to share with the parents.
Sure.
One is to understand the social media. What is it? How is the algorithm that is built behind the social media is serving up that content that is going to drive your kid to stay onto that specific social media channel, whether it is informational or whether it is social connection. Both are very good for all of us, but the algorithms that are behind these social media channels are there to have you stay there for longer. And so we need to guard our kids to let them know that what is going on here that you need to understand behind the scenes. And then also, somewhat level planning the importance of, constant likes that may give them an instant dopamine boost to help them understand that the likes are not really a reflection of who they are. And then kind of deconstructing that from their social media presence to their self-worth. And that is very, very important. We do that as adults too.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you post something or we text somebody, we are hoping for a response back or a like back. Kids do that very often, and it almost becomes very influential on their formative brain. So explaining, understanding yourself as parents, the chat functions, especially access to strangers, the privacy settings that you can help guide your kids to put on those social media becomes an important knowledge. You need to equip yourself before you can help guide your child to go through an appropriate content rather than falling into the hands of strangers or inappropriate content. So that's the first part, is understanding yourself. Mm-hmm. What is social media and the influence of it? The second is really having a good family social media plan and hold yourself accountable to that too. So American Academy of Pediatrics does have an extremely good template that you could use as your child is embarking on the social media access. So it's ideally, I would suggest, have that plan ready when your child is now starting. some of the parents, the cat is out of the bag, so they're already using the social media.
Right.
Still okay to use that template and pull them back into those guardrails that you could put together, which includes the screen time, for example, the online safety, protecting your personal privacy, really talking about that digital footprint that your child might be creating on social media and how it is so permanent. It is harder to take that away, how it's building the reputation. So those are kind of the rights and responsibility. The rights of access to social media comes with tons of responsibility, and kind of creating that family plan becomes explaining to your child that you got the right to use it, but here is your responsibility to stay within guardrails. So that's the second part of it, is having a family social media plan. The third is communication, a very direct communication. Having honest conversation without judgment with your child, because they could have a misstep. And so not judging the child, but actually really focusing on the act of a misstep or opening up the privacy setting or somehow running into a stranger conversation or maybe even commenting something that could be not in line with your family values. So those are the ways that you could kind of have a non-judgmental conversation on a regular basis. Generally, like I have a 20-year-old.
Okay.
But when he started off on social media, I was one of his friend to kind of let him know that I will be your friend for a period of time and really out there to help you guide in a non-judgmental way to have a hygiene on how you interact with social media platforms. And going through some hypotheticals, like looking at scenarios of cyberbullying, for example,
mm-hmm.
Both ways, right? So either your child could be cyberbullied, or inadvertently they could be cyberbullying somebody else or trolling somebody else. So kind of role playing and kind of talking about like what are the right things to do when you're having a conversation on social media platforms. And the last but not the least is really creating the tech-free zones, and specifically because we know that social media impacts sleep and impacts academic performance and impacts personal and social well-being, creating some of the areas tech-free, like dinner time, an hour prior to sleep, those are important, not just having your child doing it, but also modeling a healthy behavior as parents too. And we do know that, you just cited that study in which, more than 3 hours off of social media creates almost twice the mental health issue. We also know that 2 or more hours of screen time in the evening disrupts the melatonin surge, which is the sleep hormone surge in the brain, and can affect sleep. So those are things to kind of, the mealtime and sleep time are digital free. So those are kind of four areas that I wanted to communicate with parents to have a solid plan.
My guest is Dr. Arkina Dubey, and she is the Chief Medical Officer of United Healthcare of California. She's based in the Bay Area. This is Tuned In from Mount Wilson FM Broadcasters and Global Jazz Incorporated. Just to double back to some of the topics there that you discussed there, understanding social media. There are some people, I'm in my mid-50s, there are some people maybe of the generation beyond mine who really may not understand fully what it's all about. Even there are people in my own generation who really maybe not don't understand social media and what it's really all about and how detrimental it can be to the well-being of young people, especially who are so impressionable. I think about it, you see these stories every once in a while in the news of people who are using predatory-type activities online, and they're aiming them often at unsuspecting younger people. Talk about that for a moment.
Yes. It's our kids are vulnerable in a social media platform in two ways, right? So their bodies are vulnerable because their brain is still developing. Consider, why alcohol or other kind of recreational things we recommend starting after the age of 21, or actually preferably after the age of 25, is because certain parts of the brain are still developing. And there are addictive parts of the brain that are still developing, and or addiction susceptible parts of the brain are still developing. And dopamine, which is the hormone that the likes and the quick response to your social media posts triggers, is a very strong, addictive, happy hormone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a short-lived hormone, so it gives you a quick kick, but it disappears right away. So then the kid wants more and more of this likes to trigger that dopamine and happy feeling. Now, keep that in mind, the dopamine cycle, because it cycles so fast in and out of your body, the brain develops around the need for dopamine. All of the receptors in the brain are now looking for dopamine. So consider social media in the same addictive capability as other drugs out there. So think of the vulnerability for a child as what it does to your brain. Second is vulnerability in the social media platform. Because this is open to anybody,
mm-hmm.
All kinds of characters may show up.
Yep.
Of course, we saw from the advisory that came out from Surgeon General that there is, you know, information and connection are some positive things, but connections can happen to wrong people for the kids. And there are wrong people exist in the society, but because your kid, you could be protecting, you know, having your house in the safe place or having the school as a safe place. We can see those visibly. But social media is an invisible zone for you as parents. And you cannot see which part of these wrong actors are starting to access your child's space. And your child becomes vulnerable. And you cannot even see it. So that is kind of the area and caution that we as parents need to use. Just what you've mentioned, that, you know, several generations, our generation, our prior generation, were the first ones getting exposed to it, and we are still learning about it.
Sure.
And we still kind of have those missteps in making possibly a connection or a comment or consuming content that may or may not be the right and appropriate one for us, for example, as adults. Imagine what happens to the kids. They get exposed to wrong characters. They get guided in the wrong direction. We saw that happening in a recruitment of so many, campaigns, negative campaigns that happened during the pandemic time,
mm-hmm.
for example.
Mm-hmm.
And young kids got pulled into it. There are other campaigns that happened in which they were inciting kids to self-harm. And parents did not even know about it.
Yeah.
And in the kids, in the privacy of their social media, which is really, they think they're private there, but they're actually the most exposed,
yeah,
in the social media platform. They were consuming these inciting comments or remarks that were making them do self-harm. So those are cautious things to kind of keep in mind. And generally early on, having that level of transparency with your kids and ability to kind of shadow them as they are using social media is extremely helpful. And sometimes when they do have a misstep, asking them, how are you going to retract this back? If you connected with a random person, how are you going to block them? Which is one of the technology tools we have.
Right.
How are you going to flag them? So those things become important tools that you can teach your child.
My guest is Dr. Arkina Dubé, and she is the Chief Medical Officer of United Healthcare of California. We're talking this morning about tips to help protect your child's mental health from harmful social media use. Doctor, you know, as we talk about these things, and obviously social media is so prevalent these days, the ability of a parent to limit a child's, we'll talk about teenagers here for a moment. Trying to limit a teenager's time on their phone with social media, presuming they have their own phone, which many kids, of course, today do. How do you accomplish that?
let's talk about a family social media plan.
Okay, let's explain that in greater definition, yes. What that is.
Yes. So having a conversation, having a family meeting to start with, and talking about, hey, let's create our social media plan. And why are we doing it is a very important thing. Why you as a parent are doing it are different reasons than why your child needs to be part of this social media plan. Entirely different incentives, right? So
sure.
you could be talking about your child, hey, you know what, so you can use the social media freely, here are the few rules of the game so that you don't fall into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know how to contain people who could be hurting or bullying you. So they understand what is their why. Because as a parent, the why is different. As a child, your why is different. And so starting that conversation, having a family meeting to create a social media plan is the first step. As part of the social media plan, you want to include screen time limits to talk about, what is a healthy screen time limit. And generally, if you ask the child what do you think is the right screen time limit? They're not off the mark. They understand how much it is it needs to be. And so once you ask them the question and hold them accountable, it actually works a rather successful way than you telling them what the screen time limits need to be.
Sure.
Especially when you're dealing with a high schooler. And then the second is, as part of the plan, is online safety, which includes just what we talked about, how to create a privacy setting, how to block users that could be detrimental to you. What are the comments or narrative and verbiage that we need to use on social media? What are the words and narratives which are an absolute no,
mm-hmm.
And completely restricted to use in social media, especially getting personal to someone, giving a negative feedback, and even going into using slangs and others could be off-limits. So creating that off-limit category for your family plan. And then last but not the least, sharing how we can call each other and bring in accountability. So if, let's say, you as a parent are too much on the phone, your child should be allowed to call it out. And in the same way, you could do the same, and having an honest, non-judgmental call out for the social media plan for the family and breaking the rules would be a good way to create that plan.
You touch on something there that I want to double back to. As a parent, you know, our natural instincts, I think, for most people would be to protect their children. And that's, of course, so crucial in so many stages of this world, no doubt about that. Every once in a while, our kids will do something embarrassing. They'll say the wrong thing. They'll do the wrong thing. They may post something that they regret. You touched on the idea of a non-judgmental zone. I think to that conduct, if there's embarrassing conduct that may have happened with your child, you have to be able to give your children a little bit of grace, I guess, for lack of a better term, to come to you and say, I did a dumb thing. Talk about that for a moment.
Yes, and having that door open to have that open conversation around, I did a dumb thing,
mm-hmm.
is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So first acknowledging and appreciating the fact that your child came to you. If, that is a really positive step, and,
mm-hmm.
and definitely applaud them for doing that. So that way they feel that there is a safe zone where they can come in,
right.
and share their failures, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that grace, giving them grace is something that you talked about. I absolutely recommend parents to give them a pass with a condition that the same pass cannot be issued again.
Right.
If a child does the same mistake again, there are serious consequences. But the first time that the mistake happens, it is either lack of awareness or knowledge about either the functionality of the platform or appropriateness of them interacting with the platform, or just simply a dumping that happens to happen mm-hmm. by a high schooler, which is not uncommon, right?
Right?
They can do that anywhere, inclusive of the social media platform. So having the first time giving them a pass
mm-hmm.
With the condition that that pass is expired now. And next time, there will be serious consequences. And the consequences can be as minimal as, you know, a day of no social media, because depending on the severity, it could be 1 week of no social media or 1 week on the phone. And that can be, surprisingly, that can be very disconcerting for your child.
Sure.
From what I see in my practice also, because I've been practicing for 30 years as a primary care physician, and I do treat patients and kids and teenagers. And phone is almost like one of their arms or legs that you can't take away.
This is strictly your opinion now, Doctor. Teenagers and phones. I mean, we were at a point now, of course, where everybody seemingly has a phone now with them at all times. And they can be useful, no doubt, to take notes for class, especially if you're in school, or to take pictures of you know, beautiful sunsets or whatever it might be. But in general, do most teenagers need a phone?
That's a very good question, and I will frame it differently. My answer in two different ways.
Okay.
Consider phone as a car, as a resource to get, just like car is a resource from going from point A to point B. Phone is a resource for information, productivity, and also entertainment
mm-hmm.
to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
When the car is used recklessly, it can hurt that person who's sitting inside and hurt other people around them. In the same way, when the phone, which is a very powerful tool, pretty much access to the world in your hand, it can be used in a negative way too. And so having a discussion around rights and responsibilities, the R&R, is an important foundational element to have with your child. I would say that, in my opinion, we cannot remove the phone from reality. Real life of the kid. Their homeworks are coming through it. You'll be surprised. Some of the schools are posting homeworks on Instagram.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
So these social media platforms are used for communicating school events, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, if you remove your child from those, you're almost kind of socially isolating them. So there is, you know, the phone becomes a double-edged sword.
Right.
That we all need, inclusive of our child, need to be fully aware that are we exercising our brain power to use the phone to our betterment, or we are using the phone to our detriment? And each time you make a choice to use your phone, ask yourself, is it to help me or to hurt me? And if mm-hmm. that is the case, it allows for them to then have self-regulation around how to use the phone, how much to use the phone, and what to use the phone for.
I referenced earlier that I'm in my mid-50s. When I was in school, of course, there were no cell phones. There was no internet. These days, and I'm just referencing something that I may have mentioned on a different edition of my show. You know, if you did something silly and dumb, like fall down in the mud or slip or whatever it might be, at school back in those days, of course, someone would you'd get laughed at and it would be over that same day because it was over at that same day. Now, of course, since so many people have their phones, if you slip and fall and do something dumb like that, it can be recorded in an instant, uploaded in an instant, and then half the planet seemingly has seen your folly if you have a bad moment. Is it tougher fundamentally today in that sense to be a teenager because You can't sort of hide from those sort of social gaffes as opposed to, you know, 30 years ago?
Yes, yes. The social gaffes and bullying, right?
Yeah.
If a kid got bullied at school, five other kids will stand beside the kid who's getting bullied.
Mm-hmm.
Or the teacher, or the parents, right?
Right.
Today, when the child gets bullied on a social media, nobody stands beside that kid. And so there is that, you know, you think that you're connecting with people and building connection and engaging with others, but you're really isolating yourself a lot more. So that's kind of the other side or the dark side of social media in general.
Sure.
And it leads to, you know, we know it is showing up in our mental health conversations with the kids when they come for their well child visit. It's showing up as eating disorders, body dissatisfaction, because the body image issue starts. Social comparison, like most people post on social media how they are so cool, how their life is so amazing,
sure.
How they're traveling to exotic places or eating exotic food. It could be the reality is actually not only that, but there's a lot more to it, but that doesn't get posted. But then the kid who's receiving this information is comparing themselves socially to their peers and others, and they're feeling poorly about their own situation when it is not true. Their situation might be better, but the social media doesn't tell them that. And then the other aspect is the lower self-esteem. So if their friends are meeting up somewhere and they're not invited,
right?
And it continues to rub against that, so there is a lower self-esteem. Of course, they're constantly looking for the boost in scrolling on to the Insta reels and others, leading to poor sleep because they're constantly doing that. So all of this, you know, all four things, which is their body dissatisfaction, their social comparison, lower self-esteem, and poor sleep, is all the impact of them being impacted by social media in isolation, and nobody is standing beside them.
Doctor, we're just about out of time. I just want to break in with one more question. You touched on it there briefly.
Yes.
What is a well-child visit?
A well-child visit is where we combine physical health examination, mental health examination or screening, and preventative health activities that we do. But in a nutshell, that's what it is. And in which we do a full exam assessing growth and development of a child. We look through mental health screening for depression, anxiety, attention deficit disorders, if there are questions about it, or bipolarity. These are like the common ones in eating disorders for, you know, kids, because signs can start early. And then, of course, you know, routine immunizations like tetanus shot, measles, polio, hepatitis B, chickenpox, whooping cough, and others that are recommended age appropriate. And then some of the other tests that we do, like hearing and vision tests, can be part of it. Filling out kind of sport physical forms during that time could be part of it. And generally, what I would recommend to do these right before the school year starts, because then you're all set. You've almost kind of had a quick snapshot of how well your child is doing, and if there are any pending things to take care of, you could do that right before the school year starts.
Dr. Arkina Dubey, thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
It's Dr. Arkina Dubey. She is the Chief Medical Officer of United Healthcare of California. She's based in the Bay Area, and as the doctor said, you know, as we're parents, if you're a parent, obviously you want to make sure that your child is protected, their mental health is protected from harmful social media use. So it's about being involved and knowing what your kids are doing. And it's about communication. Make sure you communicate. I'm Mike Johnson. Thanks for listening to Tuned In.